Welcome to the Art of Transformation podcast, where our mission is for you to navigate change with ease and clarity in full alignment with your deeper purpose. Change is inevitable, and science tells us that with a creative growth mindset, you can guarantee a better you on the other side. Here's your host, certified professional coach and award-winning artist, Mark Sheff.
Everybody, welcome to the Art of Transformation, stories of transformation and tools to get you there. Today, we talk with Dr. Tamsin Astor. Dr. Astor is the chief habit scientist, and she's been through all kinds of transformations, many of which she shares on the podcast. She's actually even in one now. And she shares the three things that she knows from her research on how to get through these transformations so that you're better on the other side, the best version of yourself. So let's get to the episode, and thank you for growing with us. Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Art of Transformation, stories of transformation and tools to get you there. I'm your host, Mark Sheff, and I'm here with a new friend, special guest, compatriot in the coaching world. Dr. Tamsin Astor is a PhD in cognitive neuroscience, has a book out called Force of Habit, Unleashing Your Power by Developing Great Habits. I have notes here. That's why I'm looking over here. She's also the mom of three neurospicy kids, including a cancer survivor. And I'm going to actually, Tamsin, welcome to the show. I'm going to let you introduce yourself probably a bit more than I did.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. I'm super excited for our conversation. I am the chief habit scientist, so I help people create the daily habits that connect their big, juicy life and business vision. But it goes a little bit deeper than that, thanks to your fabulous conversation with me. It's more about helping people unhide those parts of themselves that they felt like they had to conform, particularly in our society of shoulding and masturbation. I'm a Londoner.
Masturbation. I like that.
Masturbation. Yeah. Right. Don't we all masturbate on such a regular basis?
Yeah. Another one that I like is that we should not should all over ourselves.
Song by Wookiefoot. That don't should on yourself. And yeah. And it's really bad for the health of your friends to should on your friends as well. Yeah. So I'm a Londoner. I live in the US, lived in the US for 21, nearly 22 years. It'll be 22 years in March. And I love to travel and I love coffee and food and live music and juicy conversations, idea sex with people. So if I can weave all of that together, the travel, the music, the food, the conversation, yum. Just gets even better.
Well, I'm kind of curious to dig into that because that you brought it up and it's something that we talked about in one of our previous conversations about how you look at duality, how you are able to hold duality. Tell me kind of about what that is and also kind of what the impact is on somebody who might work with you or experience your work in some way. Tell us a little bit more about that holding of duality.
So the holding of duality is something that I've spent my life doing in that I grew up in a home where we talked about psychoanalysis. My father was a Jungian analyst. We talked about lots of art. We talked about the data and science of the world. My uncle's an OBGYN. So we had this interesting combination of like the logic, the math, the data, the science with art and creativity. And my grandmother was psychic and was into aromatherapy and homeopathy in the 70s. Like those were sort of things that were kind of unusual in a lot of the world.
And to be clear, like you have a story about that. Would you mind telling it?
Sure. Yeah. Which is one of those extraordinary stories, which to me felt completely normal in the home that I grew up. So when I was 11, I started taking the classic red London bus to school on my own, the ones that you could jump on and off. And buses have this tendency to either arrive all together. So I managed to run to the stop and all of my friends got on the bus and it went off. And so I had to jump on the one that came after. And what I didn't realize was that the stop that was closest to my school was a request stop, i.e. the bus only stopped there if you rang the bell. So I'm standing there, got my backpack on and my school uniform on. The bus flies past the bus stop. So I get up in a vague state of panic because I was very driven by like following those right rules when I was a little girl. And I grabbed hold and leant out to look where was the next bus stop. The next thing I knew, I was walking along the street, blood pouring down my face. I didn't know my name. didn't know what the day of the week was. And then my next memory was sitting in a stranger's living room with them going, what's your name? What's your name? What's your name? What's your phone number? While this was going on, my grandmother called my mother and said, something has happened to her. You need to call the school. My mother called the school and said, she first said to my grandmother, like, don't be crazy. She went off to school, it's fine. And my grandmother was like, no, no, something's happened. You need to call the school. So my mother called the school and found out that I'd never showed up. So then the search began. Where was Tamsin? And after repeatedly, apparently I repeatedly came up with the wrong phone number, the wrong phone number, the wrong phone number, didn't know my name, didn't know my name. And after they kept asking me, they luckily found my name. And then they took me to the ER, and my mother met me there. So that was this sort of one of those first stories, and I've many more of my psychic grandmother, but that was perfectly normal in conjunction with the logic, the science, the data, and everything else.
So how does that work into the work that you do as chief habit scientist?
So I am comfortable helping people hold the duality of where they are right now and where they want to be, that they are complete and whole, even if they're in a state of transition, even if they're in a state of pain, even if they're in a state of growth. So holding the now with the this is where you want to go. Holding the duality of quantitative and qualitative data to understand how you feel and show up, right? So with my clients, I'll talk about what is the number on the scales? What's the net amount in the bank account? Like, what is the concrete data that is in alignment with what we're talking about? And then what is the qualitative data? How do you feel when you do or don't do these things? And how do those two relate to each other? Because we have a society that so often focuses on quantitative data. Like, what is the stuff that we can see? And we're so badly educated. And I think we do a terrible disservice to our children in terms of, how do I feel about what I'm doing or not doing? And what does that information tell me about how I'm living in alignment with my GC vision for my life, my business, the kinds of relationships I want, the kind of body I want to have, the kind of home I want to have?
The question that's coming up for me around that is, okay, I think, and there's some science that maybe just came out or just sort of came into my radar that some financial institution, maybe it was like the Kennedy Center at Harvard or something, that did a study on how decisions are made. They looked at like big hedge funds, finance firms, like Harvard-y stuff. And they found, no surprise, that no matter what kind of logic there is behind a decision, all decisions, the origin of all decisions is emotional. It's feeling.
Yeah.
We can say, you hear this all the time, even in the corporate world. Well, why did you do that? I don't know. I just had a feeling about it. And I can now go back and say, oh, this is the logic and whatever. But it's all, and even when someone says this is just a logical decision, there's still a feeling that's driving that. A feeling, what is it that you want from, you know, what is driving your logic? You're moving towards a feeling of safety, success, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What would you, maybe I just sort of spoiled it, but like, that's what I would kind of say to people who are like, I try not to, you know, let my emotions guide my feelings. What is the benefit of accepting that and using that knowledge to actually drive more, as you said, kind of in alignment decisions? What does that actually get someone?
So depending on who you talk to, you have to figure out the way that they understand that concept, right? So some people will talk about it as intuition. Some religious people might talk about it as like, God is talking to me, or the universe is talking to me, or spirit is talking to me. So some people will see that as slowing down and getting quiet and allowing that information in. So the benefit is that that information will often guide more, you'll make less mistakes when you follow that, right? So often we're driven by the logical thing to do, right? We're driven by the thing that makes sense rather than the thing that feels right. But one of the things that we fail to do in society, particularly we see that with girls when they start to go into that stage of puberty, is that we're told to shut down, right? Mm. We're told not to, like, even just sort of classic, like, kiss your uncle hello on the cheek, rather than like, do you feel safe kissing this person who might to you feel like a stranger on the cheek, right? Like, we start to train people to shut that down. And what that often does is we start losing trust in ourselves. And it's hard to take action when you're not doing it from a place of self-trust. The benefit I see, and that I see with my clients, is when they start to listen to that gut feeling, that little voice inside, the universe, God, intuition, however you want to phrase it, they create self-trust. And when they create self-trust, they like themselves more, they feel happier, and they feel like they are making decisions from a place of deep inner knowing, rather than because there's this external pressure. And tangentially related to this, in our society, there's a pressure for continued action, right? And I was having this conversation this morning with my coach about how I'm in a state of transition right now, feeling pressured because of, you know, living in this world of like, what's my next goal? What's my next? And working on sitting with the, I don't know what my next step is, and that's okay. Right? And doing that is going to create self-trust in me rather than going, I need to take the next step because that's what's expected of me.
Right. Like the kissing the uncle on the cheek. This is the thing that's expected. You know, it doesn't necessarily fit with who I am or what I want or what I'm comfortable with. And if you learn to, like, I like what you're saying here. If you learn to sort of tamp that down, then you might make decisions. And we see this all the time. People who make decisions that will lead them towards, you know, success, the how to 10X your thing and the one weird trick and, you know, do all these things. The thing that really lights me up, I'm hearing from you, is when you're having that conversation and saying, okay, so what is behind that? What is it? Okay, so you get all that. You get all that success, you know, money, fame, whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're looking for. What is it that you're looking for? What does that get you?
Yeah.
Oh, I get to have all these, but it always, in my experience, and maybe yours, always comes back to how someone wants to feel at the end of the day. Yeah. And it's crazy, like we're sitting here talking about feelings, but if we can identify, I totally agree. If we can identify what that end feeling is for ourselves and for the others around us. I feel like what I'm hearing is that there's that, yes, that self-trust, which also means that other people trust us. So when we trust ourselves and are acting in alignment with ourselves, other people see that. And there's a feeling of trust, which if you want to get really sort of Machiavellian or capitalist about it, like if people trust me, there's connections that can be made. There's work that might be gotten. There's, you know, there's things that we can do together that I can do with someone who I trust versus someone I don't know where their decisions are coming from. So I can't, I kind of want to stay away.
Right. And that's absolutely true. And I think the other kind of piece in relation to this is that the more that we can live from that ourselves, the more connection we create around us that is deeply authentic. So, you know, for example, you know, when I led our call on Friday, you know, that group of us who we all came together from
being in the same space. Thank you.
I was welcome. But I mean, I was struck by how safe everybody felt being deeply vulnerable. Right. And I reflected over the weekend, like, what had I done in the setup of that to create that? Because it was very deeply moving to me how comfortable and vulnerable everybody felt in that space. And I think that what I took away from that was that because I was comfortable being deeply vulnerable myself, and like I showed up in the, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is what I believe in. And I'm in this state right now of not knowing exactly where I'm going with this, that, and the other. So QED, you can all share that too, right? And so the point I think about this is that the more we can tap into how we're feeling, and for me, that came through being diagnosed with complex PTSD and my talk therapist saying, you got to stop talking your way through this and thinking your way through this. You've got to feel your way through this.
So what are we doing here?
He was like, Condi, I'm going to fire you for a little bit. You need to go and work with therapists who can help you feel your way through this.
You got fired by your therapist.
Yeah.
That's great. I love it.
But that really is the thing, right? I've heard this quote recently in the relation to this. Like, if you want to change the way people behave, you need to change the way they think. If you want to change the way people think, you need to change the way they feel. And that's how these are all related. As a Buddhist of a decade, like, you know, that's a large fundamental part of being a Buddhist, is thinking about that connection between your beliefs, your thoughts, your actions, and that's then who you are as a human and how you show up, and being responsible for looking at those connections.
How has that influenced, the Buddhist side, how has that influenced your transformation over the past 5-10 years?
So the thing that for me has been the huge part of Buddhism is learning to be friends with my own mind. So one of the things that I found irritating about sort of classic Christianity was the, I'm going to be forgiven my sins every week. Clean slate, but there was no deep reflection on why had I gone down that thought pathway and said those things to somebody and hurt them? Why had I failed to stand up for myself in this situation? It was just like, oh, you're forgiven for this thing. And that frustrated me. And I discovered Buddhism as part of my yoga teacher training about 15 years ago. And I happened to do one that was steeped in Buddhism rather than in Hinduism. And the kind of common thread was, how can I be helpful? And that was how the Buddhism was initially introduced. And the more I dug into Buddhism, what I really understood was that it was about me making friends with my own mind. And the more I could understand my own mind and reflect on how my mind operated. So when I'm still and meditating, does my mind tend to go towards everything will be better when I lose 10 pounds, when I'm in that perfect relationship, when I get that particular person in my life, when I get the grant, when I buy that house, when I get the car, you know, does it go to the future? Or do I sit there and go, why did I do that? Like past regret, 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 right? What does my mind do when I'm not filling it? So I get to know my mind and I get comfortable with my mind. And the other thing that meditation has done a huge, which is a sort of large part of my Buddhist practice, is the classic Frankl quote, the Viktor Frankl quote of the gap between stimulus and response is your source of greatest freedom. Mm. And, you know, my PhD examined conscious awareness of reaction. My PhD thesis was intention and reactivity in cognitive neuroscience. And it's sort of ironic that I was doing that in the late 90s, given what I do now, right? But this idea of like, when stimulus arises, whether it's the dog barking, the kid going, mom, 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 dad, 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 the client knocking at the door, right? Or the internal, why did I say this? What do I do? Like, where's my to-do list? Did I lose my keys? Going, huh? And that for me has been the biggest gift, because it allows me to show up in a state of intentionality rather than reactivity.
Mm, there's a lot that is hitting on. I'm thinking back to a lot of my coach training and coaching experience, that silence that you can create with someone and not be in a rush, fill it. Sometimes that is where so much work happens. There's a TED talk that I just watched. I forced my son to watch it. He's 13 and he wanted to come home early from school one day. And it was just sort of study hall and he had done everything already. And I was like, you can come home, but you have to sit with me and watch this TED talk. It's 17 minutes. You have to sit and watch it with me together at home. That's the deal. Fine. Comes home. And it's this TED talk you can find. It's on boredom and what happens when we're bored, which is maybe also what happens when we meditate or sit quietly. I mean, boredom looks a lot like maybe staring at the ceiling, which I've said for many, many years that staring at the ceiling is a very important part of my creative process for hours. What happens, according to this scientist, the research that they did was that, you know, our brain goes into default mode, and default mode is when the right brain kind of gets to play. We're not focused in on solving a problem. Our brain is sort of expanded out. And it might not feel that way. Like you might feel like you're looping on something and that might be happening. But at the same time, this is just what the right brain does, is it kind of takes a big picture view and says, oh, you know, it'd be neat if we took that over there and put it with that over there and mesh those things up. And that is kind of the source of creativity for a lot of what we do. So it makes complete sense to me that silence would create so much possibility and transformation for you, for your clients. I mean,
yeah. And to your point about the boredom piece, is that's a real struggle in our modern society, because we are taught to fill, consume. And the problem with that is it leaves very little space to create those connections, you know, which is so vital to who we are. Like I was thinking about what you were saying to your son, like, I can imagine like how many kids would be like, yeah, I'll sit next to you and watch that while I'm on my phone, Dad. Yeah. You know?
Well, you know, I watch a lot of stand-up comedy. I watch a lot of clips and I watch a lot of specials, and I forget the guy's name, but he was talking about meditation and maybe Buddhism. And he's like, I don't remember exactly what he said, but I think about, you know, my kid, if he doesn't have his phone, he's like, I'm bored. And I was like, so like, how much time did we spend like, go outside and sit and stare at the clouds? I'm like a Zen master. Like he was saying that we talk so much about mindfulness now. Mindfulness, like we have to get back to mindfulness. It's like, we were real good at this as kids. Like no one talked about mindfulness in the 90s, but like, man, we were doing it because we didn't have all this shit to like distract us. Somebody else, you go look up the comedian. I don't want to steal his stuff. But getting back to mindfulness and how that can create transformation, I know that you've experienced, and I mean, you've acknowledged you're sort of in the middle of a transformation right now. Maybe there's something that you can share with our vast audience, all five of them. What is something that you're doing? You're in the middle of this, like you're discovering a new path. You're doing a lot already. You've got all these, you've got books and PhDs and all these things. So what is it? Tell us a little bit about this transformation as you're aware of it in the moment.
So as I'm in this transition right now, what I'm working on is the sort of the visual I have is the eye of being the eye of the storm. So I'm sitting here and, you know, I'm in a state where I don't know where my three children will be living come August. So that feels quite destabilizing.
Yeah.
Right. So there's that spinning around me. And I'm redefining what my business looks like and the way it's structured because my children's lives are changing. I am planning on moving at the end of this year. So there's a lot of stuff that is swirling around me. And so as I'm in this state of transformation, one of the things that I'm holding on to is this mantra, which I got from Rob Bell when I went to see Liz Gilbert and Rob Bell at Omega last summer. I'm on Tamsin time. I am on Tamsin time. I'm not on anybody else's fucking time because there's this pressure to be like, okay, you're redefining your niche, you're building your speaking business. Who's you know, fuck that, right? I've got to shut that down. And I can feel that because I am somebody that I have like 9 certifications. I've been a busy human in the last 10, you know, since I moved into this world. I haven't sat on my ass. But I'm in a space of going, this all feels very different and I'm transforming. So the first is to give myself the permission to say, I am on my own schedule. I am on my own time frame. And I have no clue what that's going to look like. And that's okay. So that's the first.
Being okay with not knowing. I know it sounds so like, oh yeah, like woo-woo, whatever. Yeah. But I mean, I think about like when I'm working with somebody who's like a brand expert and looking to kind of, you know, do his own thing. And there's a lot of not knowing and we're all kinds of people. I mean, I can give you, you know, examples from probably everybody that I've worked with. And there's a lot of like, I don't know how that's going to go, or I don't even really know exactly what I want here. And I think you said it, like we live in a society where it's like, you got to know, you got to go out and get your, crush your goals and get 10X, all this stuff. And it's like, ooh, like, what if I just took a minute and gathered some information and gave my default mode a little time to actually put it together in a way that makes the most sense.
Exactly. So that's the first piece that I think is really key when you're in a state of transformation is doing it on your own time scale. And it's like grief. I've had a few major grief moments in my life. And there is no time scale for grief either. Of like a decade yesterday that my cousin, like a brother, died of leukemia. He and I were like brother and sister growing up. He was 3 months younger than, and he had a huge impact on my life growing up. But also as he was dying, we had a lot of conversations that gave me a huge amount of emotional willpower to take action in a space that I was frightened to take action, which was when my ex-husband walked out the fourth time, conversations with Mark, I realized I couldn't take him back that fourth time and that I had to switch into living for myself, not living for my children. And it was directly through his conversation. So the first thing is being willing to do it on your own time scale, right? Not being feeling forced by everybody else. The second thing for me that has become so important is to, I've spent a lot of my life taking action and then getting the feedback from the action of like, well, did I do the right fucking thing? I'll be like, okay, I'm thinking about this. I'll go out and do it. And then it'll go for a bit. And then I'll be like, maybe that's not working. And so the space I'm in right now, because I've spent a lot of time in the last 4 or 5 months doing a lot more of this kind of somatic embodiment, allowing myself to feel my feelings and use those as a guide, not as the only guide, but to incorporate that with my intellect, which is, I know, strong and powerful and dominant in the way I engage in the world, and to use the feeling. So follow the feeling. So that's how I created our group Prosperous. Was I just, there were certain people in the group and I liked the way they were engaging. And I was like, hey, do you want to have a conversation? Follow the feeling rather than being all logical and like, why would they want to do that? They're all follow the feeling, right? I'm just going to follow the feeling and see what emerges and use that as a source of data, a valuable source of data, a useful source of data, and not just the kind of intellectual overthinking piece that is my natural tendency, is to think my way through the situation.
So doing stuff on your own time scale, combining feelings and intellect, but really paying attention to the feelings, which is something that maybe there's someone listening to this who's like, I'm really good at this, but like most of us are, it's something that we even, you know, speaking for myself too, like it's a thing that I need to intentionally say, okay, let me just intentionally go look at the feeling and okay, this isn't feeling right, or it is feeling right. Is, you know, is that okay? Quick question about feelings, because you're a parent, I'm a parent. We know what it looks like for people to follow their feelings. Little people. And sometimes we act like little people when we're like, just there's like this big feeling of like, I don't wanna, or I do wanna, like, I just wanna, how to know which bucket, you know, the feelings are in, like, pay attention to this one or notice this one, integrate it, but do not act on that feeling.
Right. So part of that, again, is the practice of noticing. So for me, when I first started doing this work on myself and started helping my clients with this, it was often retroactive. You know, we would take a situation where we had sort of had a feeling and we'd thought, maybe I should do this, but you know, but logic says I should do that. And you'd follow one path and then stuff blows up and you're like, maybe I should have, right? And you do this sort of thinking back over. So one of the things that I found useful in doing this work is doing some of that reflective practice, right? Of like, when I have or haven't followed that gut feeling, has it worked for me, right? And then as you get more practice at doing that, you start to notice. So a sort of concrete example, I am trained in Ayurveda, and a large part of my training was leading people through cleanses. And depending on your energetic profile, you'd do a different kind of cleanse for your body. And what would people would notice was what they started to change their cravings around. Was it sugar or, you know, carbs or whatever it was that they were craving? And so when people would say things like, I'm craving sugar, carbs, I would say, like, let's talk this through and work on it. Like, well, how have you been eating versus your body craving steak or spinach, right? If your body's craving steak or spinach, that's probably the information that you need iron. Or if your body's craving salmon, you probably need omega, right? So starting to connect the dot between the pull and what you know about that pull. We know that when we get pulled towards sugar, whether it's alcohol or processed carb, we get pulled into that space. And we know that it's the model I was given was, you know, it's the race car versus like the trusty old Volvo station wagon. The brown rice will get you there in a nice, strong, energetic, you won't crash. You know, the white rice will, right?
Yeah.
You'll crash, right? So part of it is it's practice, right? It's a little bit like figuring out your keystone habit, which I do a lot of work with on my clients, is that often it's not immediately obvious. You have to gather the data and explore and learn to connect the dots.
There's so much there. Quickly, can you elaborate? What is a keystone habit?
Sure. So a keystone habit is, you know, the keystone arch. The keystone is the one in the middle that if you take it away, the arch crumbles. So your keystone habit is the habit that when you figure it out, it tends to precipitate the following through of other habits. So for example, if your keystone habit was sleep.
Was what?
Was sleep. Like if you got your 7, 8, 9 hours of night of sleep at night, and you noticed that when you slept, you would go into your jujitsu, you would eat your healthy green smoothie, you would be less reactive with your kids, et cetera, et cetera. That would be your keystone habit because you would, all the other habits would good. Right?
Right.
And often when we're trying to figure out our keystone habit, the best way to notice it is when we stop doing. So we're traveling, we've got guests in town, we've got COVID, whatever it is, and you stop exercising, your sleep gets derailed, you stop eating the food that you know nourishes your body, you stop meditating, journaling, having your daily walk where you don't talk to anybody, whatever it is that you do regularly, you suddenly notice, gosh, I haven't done that for a week and I'm pissy, I'm angry, I haven't worked out, I'm eating donuts, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, you nailed it with me. I definitely, now it actually, sleep and jujitsu, like if those things, if I'm doing those things, sleep is probably the keystone habit. Is that a keystone habit for a lot of people? Is that kind of...
Yeah, sleep is a keystone habit for a lot of people. Meditation or some kind of reflective practice where you're not consuming information and you are processing, digesting, taking care of your mind. And movement. Those tend to be often like really key ones for people.
Interesting that they're all sort of body related. Something you said before that I kind of want to get back to, there's like a really beautiful nugget in something you said earlier that I just want to name here, is that one of the ways that you can start to or go through a period of transformation is to just start to notice. Just notice what actions you're taking. No judgment, no just like, okay, these are the actions that I'm taking. This is how I reacted when my kid did this, when my partner did this, when the people at work did this. This is how I'm acting and how I'm behaving. And then to also just take that and say, so how has that served me in the past? Has it served me in the past? What is the result? I guess I'm not talking to somebody who's like 15, but like, you know, somebody in their 20s, 30s, somebody who's lived a little bit of life to say, okay, well, how has this served me? Maybe it's not a negative, but it's not really getting somebody where they want to go. I like that idea of just sort of, again, it's that right brain thing, kind of stepping back and going, well, let me just sort of look, what does this actually look like? If I continue these actions, where does that go, if anywhere? And the other aspect that I would add into that process, and I think you also do this, is the process of saying, okay, we're stepping back. Maybe this is kind of where it's going. Like, where do you think you might want to be? Okay, maybe here. Like, what is the action that person That imaginary person in your future would take now to start getting there. I had this one of my deep dive sessions with someone the other day, and it's so funny. Like she had a number of goals, and we had talked a couple of months ago, and she booked the session for now. And so between now and then, things had sort of evolved for her at work, and you know, with her social life where she lives. And it was funny. She said to me after the session, a couple of days after the session, she said, "You know, I knew that I was working towards X. I was working towards this series of moves and decisions and everything in August. What really clicked in for me is the things I can be doing literally right now. It's not that I'm like waiting and then, okay, in August, I'm going to suddenly be a different person or, you know, get a raise, get a promotion, get a different job. And now I'm different. But there's things that I can do right now that seem very small. But as we know with habits, it's that sort of like you change the trajectory like this. And over time, it's a big lift. So that visioning, connecting it with, right? You're nodding a lot. So I said,
yeah, right. Because that's what I do. So I help people create that big, juicy vision and connect their daily habits, right? And it's an iterative process, right? We change where we want to go. We change our habits. We move and we morph, right? It's not, so I love the whole vision board and creating all of that, but it's not static. Part of it is, as you say, it's this process of reflection and taking care. You know, in that space, one of the things that I think is really critical when we're in a state of transition is who are we surrounding ourselves with? Because that's one of the things I talk a lot about with habit. You can create a new habit in 21 days. And then people are like, oh my God, I'm a failure because I haven't done it in 20 days. Because we don't live in a freaking vacuum. We live in these complex, complicated lives with environments and multiple relationships and pandemics and what's going on in Israel and et cetera, that massively impact how we show up. And if we are hanging out with people who should on us, who force this state of masturbation, who say, and what's next, what's next, what's next? Or how can I fix you? Rather than hanging out with people who go, do you just need me to hold space so that you can talk? Would you like some solutions or ideas or suggestions? Would you just need a hug? Right? Like hanging out, thinking a lot, you know, with the average of the five people we spend the most time, right?
Yeah, I forget who said that was the cover.
It was, and so that is really important. When I started with you today and we did that heart, right? We were working on aligning our hearts, getting our hearts in coherence. Right,
just
that's heart math.
Yeah,
just
that's
before the call,
that's the
right?
The reason I'm not a total bonkers right now.
Right, and that we're getting into heart alignment. We're getting into energetic coherence. We're looking at how our heart rate variability comes into alignment together as humans, and that creates a sense of connection. And when we surround ourselves with people who have that self trust, who listen to their intuition, it allows them also to hold space and listen to the intuition of those around them. And so that's something that's really important is when you're in a state of transition, if you don't know yet where you're trying to be, surrounding yourself with people who are kind and thoughtful and reflective and will not just throw things on you, but say, what is it that you need? And ask you questions rather than trying to fix you and say, you're stuck. Let me help you get through this problem is not helpful, right? So really cognizant of the people we spend the time with. And I see that so much in my work. When people start to change their habits, they're changing their identity because we judge people, group people, associate people, stereotype people based on a lot of their actions and behaviors, which is what habits are. And when people start to change their habits, the people around them start to notice that. And you'll either get the people that are like leaning in going, like in When Harry Met Sally, aging myself here, I'll have what she's having, right? Yeah. Right?
They're like, yes, please. I remember it well.
Right? Or the like, I'm frightened by the changes you're making because you no longer have predictable actions and behaviors in the way that you used to. Right. And I'm going to condemn you, make you feel shitty, pull away. That's the other thing, like in life in general, but particularly when you're in a moment of transition, is being around people who are not trying to force their agenda or try and fix you and keep you online with allowing me to be in my own time sometimes is so key.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole other conversation to be had. Where that takes me is this idea that I've worked with. We've created our lives. We essentially are a puzzle piece that fits in our life in some way. And when we decide that we want to be different, better, more authentic to ourselves, our puzzle piece shape is going to change. Okay. Yeah. So the pieces that we've, you know, built around us, you know, no longer fit. And those pieces can either, like you said, kind of be flexible and hold space for us and say, okay, you want to be here, we got you. Like, we're going to change, you know, we're going to change around you. And then there's going to be some pieces that are like, no, I'm rigid and I'm not going to change. And that's where things like our energy audits and other things that we do start to come into play, where we say, okay, for me to have the space and mindset and time to really live into this way of being person that I want to be, you know, forget the woo stuff. Like, I want to be a better person. I want to be less reactive. I want to not yell when my, you know, kids do something or when, you know, something happens. So for me to do that, I need the pieces around me to be able to hold that space. And I think that can be done in lots of different ways through either conversation or action. But the flip side of that is that there's going to be some pieces that don't.
Yeah. And I think we have to be okay with that. So often you have these like bros before hoes and like girlfriends never end and like all of this like BS around how friendship lasts forever and relationships don't, which I've had to let go of friendships over the years when I've stepped into a new state of self-knowing and going, you know what? I don't want to be friends with somebody who all they do is complain because that drags my energy down and they're not taking action. And fine, we all bitch and complain and moan. But like, if you are not going to take action and all you do is complain to me, I don't want to be your friend. Like, I find it exhausting, right?
Yeah.
Or you're a friend that always takes from me, but never gives. I had this friend who was always like, can you pick up my kids from school? Oh, you're at the grocery store. Please buy my dog some food. Can you but it was never reciprocated. And it got to this point where I was like, I'm the one that's always giving and this feels depleting. And so allowing ourselves to kind of break out of the like model that this has to last forever and that we can flip and change and take care of ourselves and let go.
Yeah, I've been writing some notes on the side. I think there's a few really great nuggets here for me about when it comes to transformation, things to sort of keep in mind are, you know, doing things on your own timescale, really paying attention to feelings, not in a way that's judgmental, but just in a way that's like, okay, so what are the feelings that I'm having? Is there a reason? Is there something that I'm trying to, is there something that I need or want that I'm not getting? And then this idea that we need support system, you know? Even if that's one person that we're saying, okay, I think that I want to become, I mean, you and I had this conversation on WhatsApp the other day, where you asked me a really great question about what it was that I wanted and what it was that I needed. And I was able to, in that space, really come to some sort of big conclusions about what it is that I, you know, who it is that I want to be. So thank you, first of all. And I would invite and encourage like anybody who's listening to this, think of that one person, maybe it's just one person. It doesn't have to be like a whole team of people. Like, who's the one person that you could go to and say, I really want to be more like this. I really want to actually develop this skill or this better habit way of being around like the person that I really want to be. It's not, no one's broken. We're all just changing. We're all just learning about ourselves and changing. What would you leave our, again, just huge, vast numbers of listeners with today?
So I see the picture of Einstein, I believe, behind you. Yes.
That's a painting. Yeah, I made that painting.
Amazing. Oh my God, I love it. Hang out more in your house with you, by the way.
Next time you're in Brooklyn, for real, yeah. We got it. We are on the calendar.
I story about Einstein that when he would get stuck with problems, rather than trying to force himself through, he would pick up the violin. And the violin gave him that sense of forward motion, that sense of expansive creativity. And then he could reorient back to solve the problem. So I think the kind of big takeaway from all of this is that all of this work that you and I and all of these sort of coaches that we are around that are helping people in states of transformation, there are lots of tools and mindset and practical habits and, you know, visioning and all of those things to do. The communities are all really important. But one of the most important things is to give yourself grace and not try to force it. And I think one of the things that is really interesting, and I forget where I read the study, but there was a study done recently on the concept of the hustle culture. And how that, and I see that with my 20-year-old. The conversations I've had with my 20-year-old and his friends is they have a much stronger concept around the value of friendship and life and time off and travel and exploration rather than this like hustle and work, you know, until I die. The statistics on each of the generations in terms of, yes, the hustle culture is the way to live, massively drop as the generations get younger. And so thinking about the model of Einstein and all of our conversations is give yourself grace, be kind to yourself, right? Allow yourself the space to go.
That's a beautiful ending, I think. I do like to ask everyone, what is the best way people can find you, work with you? What are the ways that people can find you?
Find me on LinkedIn, Camden Astor, or Facebook, Camden Astor. And you can check out some of my videos and regular writings and, you know, get some freebies and then have a conversation about working with me one-on-one or in my program called Habit Magic 101. or have me come and do a workshop or training at your organization, because that's one of my juicy fun things. I'm really good at facilitating conversations that transform people's lives.
Yeah. We'll post all of those links in the show notes. And I'm saying that here so that when I re-listen to this, I remember to do it. Thank you again for being on the podcast. We are in the process of getting a new sort of podcast publishing thing going. So I hope that by the time this comes out, you can listen to The Art of Transformation on many different services, including Spotify, including Apple Podcasts, and many others. We're also going to be posting these on YouTube. So maybe you're seeing this already in one of these places. And if you are, I would love it if you did all the liking and subscribing and everything else you're supposed to do. And I'd love to hear from you if you got something out of the podcast. If there's something that you would love to share, send me a message. I respond to everything. And thanks again, Dr. Tamsin Astor. It's been so lovely having you.
Thank you so much for creating the space to ask me questions, which creates deep reflection and transformation in me too, Mark.
My pleasure. I'm going to end the recording and we will talk soon. Oh man, I loved that conversation with my friend, Dr. Tamsin Astor. And if you enjoyed it as much as I did, please do all the things, like and subscribe. And if there's an insight that you get from this podcast or any of the episodes, if there's something you realized, something you learned about yourself, something you're excited to go do now, I would love to hear about it in the comments. I love hearing what the impact is on the world around me. So if there was an impact on you, I would love it if you shared it in the comments. Until next time, thanks so much. I'm your host, Mark Scheff, Coach Mark. Talk to you soon.